This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area Monday, October 29, 2012. A 53-year-old Dolores man accused of starting the road cap fire has been identified. The fire started October 24th between Cortez and Dolores and spread quickly in high winds, prompting the evacuation of over 30 homes. The Durango Herald reports the Montezuma County Court has identified Roger Stratton as the man taken into custody Thursday on a warrant for felony fourth-degree arson. Sheriff Dennis Spruill said the fire was not set intentionally, but the person involved needed to be held accountable for what he called careless actions. Authorities have said the fire was sparked by someone burning trash on private land. Residents have since been allowed to return home, and the fire is largely contained, and no structures were lost. On Friday, Governor John Hickenlooper signed a disaster declaration for the fire. The executive order makes resources available to pay for fire suppression, response, and recovery related to the road cap fire. Disaster declarations authorize the transfer of any funds in the state budget to the Disaster Emergency Fund, which is not funded unless money is needed. State law does not allow people who have lost homes or property in the fire to seek reimbursement from these disaster funds. Control of the Colorado State House is up for grabs this November, and the balance of power could hinge on just a handful of races. Republicans currently have a one-seat advantage in the House of Representatives and are trying to hang on to their majority. Ben Berkland has this profile on one of the more competitive races.
For years, State House District 3 was a Democratic stronghold, but the district was redrawn and now includes parts of several southern suburbs surrounding Denver. It's also a key swing district for both parties.
It's not just like any other race. When you know that the question of who has the majority in the State House is riding on your shoulders, it focuses your attention.
Democrat Daniel Kagan is the incumbent in this race. He was originally appointed to his House seat and has served nearly four legislative sessions. But he's never had to run in a competitive race until now.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm just paying you a courtesy call. I'm Daniel Kagan.
Kagan is an attorney who grew up in England and helped run his family's textile business. Going door to door, he tells potential voters that he prides himself on working across the aisle.
What I'm trying to do is to try and stop Washington, D.C. style politics from taking over Colorado.
Right.
Because when I watch what they're up to up there, and I see how they bash each other's heads against the wall and get nothing done. If that comes to our state,
we're in trouble.
You know, we're in trouble.
Republican Brian Watson is running against Kagan. Watson grew up in Olathe on the Western Slope and founded a commercial real estate company in Denver that employs about 70 people. He, too, is spending several hours each day going door to door, sharing his views on education, the environment, and the economy.
And I've heard some really heartbreaking stories as it relates to people being either out of work or underemployed. People are losing their homes.
Watson says he especially wants to give small business a stronger voice at the State House.
I believe we live in the greatest state in the union. We have the greatest natural resources, and we have the greatest human capital resources, and I just want the opportunity to help put both of them to work. And so I left the House at 17 years of age and had to put myself through school at CU Boulder. Mr. Kagan just comes from a different background. We just have a fundamental difference in terms of what we believe the role of government should be in society.
And those differences extend to some of the hot-button issues that are almost certain to come up next session. Kagan supports a bill to allow illegal immigrant students who graduate from Colorado high schools to pay a lower tuition rate than out-of-state tuition. Watson opposes the measure, saying it sends the wrong message to immigrants who enter the country legally.
We need to be a society of laws.
Kagan is also a strong backer of civil unions. He says part of his support stems from his family history. His parents met in a Nazi concentration camp.
I find it troubling when people are denied their rights, really. My parents' experience of the ultimate oppression, being put in a concentration camp and being stored there and used as slave labor until they decide it's time to kill you, has really affected my whole life.
And it's why Kagan says he wants to be a public servant. Brian Watson says he doesn't have a personal problem with civil unions, but he would vote against a bill to allow them.
Certain issues are states' rights issues, and I believe we should put them up for a vote of the people and let the people decide. And so civil unions specifically, I think, should be, you know, a ballot initiative.
And while the race has had its fair share of attacks, with all the focus on the presidential race, it's largely flown under the radar. Colorado State University political science professor John Strayer says it's tough for down-ticket races to bust through all the election noise. But he says both candidates will certainly benefit if their parties mobilize their bases.
But I don't think it necessarily means that the presidential numbers in a legislative district will automatically determine the winner, Democratic or Republican winner. Yeah, I think the voters move around a little bit. Not a whole lot, but I think they do move around some.
House District 3 is turning out to be one of the most competitive and expensive statehouse races in Colorado. Representative Kagan has raised nearly $150,000 for his campaign. Brian Watson's raised $250,000. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
The race to fill House District 61 in the state legislature is a crowded one. And the district is large, spanning Pitkin, Summit, Lake, and half of Delta and Gunnison counties. The candidates are vying to represent rural agricultural communities along with well-heeled Aspen. People in the district have a range of concerns, from oil drilling to education. From Aspen Public Radio, Roger Adams reports.
One notable distinction in the race is an unaffiliated candidate who's running against the established dominance of the Republican and Democratic parties. Kathleen Curry, who once held the seat as a Democrat, dropped the party in 2009 and was then defeated when her name did not appear on the ballot 2 years ago.
This is the first time a voter's been able to vote for an unaffiliated person. It's all unknown. This is new territory. But what I think it is a good fit with where a lot of people are at. They are tired of the partisanship. They're tired of things like the negative tactics that are being used. They're tired of the squabbling.
Curry remembers the isolation of not being part of a party caucus at the state capitol, but she says she had the freedom to vote her conscience versus party lines. If elected, she says she's beholden only to voters. Curry is a rancher and has a background in natural resources management. She says water and natural resources are major concerns across the diverse district.
The issues that face this district that go even beyond Pitkin County, there's a really serious forest health challenge in Summit County. There are water resources challenges throughout the district. Delta County has issues with gas drilling, for example, and I was a leader on gas issues in the House. So I have this strong background on the issues that are important.
Like Curry, Democrat Millie Hamner has a legislative record. She's challenging Curry for the seat. Last year, the district was redrawn. It's a process that happens every 10 years after the census. In the change, incumbent Roger Wilson, a Democrat, said he would not run for re-election. Millie Hamner, now the representative in another district, announced her candidacy. Hamner, a lifelong teacher and school administrator, has made education her top priority. It's an issue, she says, that all voters care about.
Maybe it's because of my background in education, but wherever I go, there's a common thread of concern about public education funding and supporting public education. So I think that crosses all of the county lines and all of the boundaries of the new House District 61.
Across the district, says Hamner, parents are worried about deepening cuts in school budgets. The cuts are a result of Tabor, the voter-approved taxpayers' Bill of Rights, and the recession, which put pressure on the state budget. It's not uncommon when campaigning, says Hamner, to meet worried parents of school-aged children.
Who are finding that they're having to foot the bill for more school supplies and, you know, more things that the classroom is not able to support on the teacher supply budget. And also frustration on the part of parents when they see a good teacher let go or a teacher's hours being cut back so that the school can make their budget.
Hamner already has championed school budgetary issues in the legislature. She also says that environmental concerns like oil and gas development are issues she emphasizes in her campaign. Hamner and Kathleen Curry have similar agendas. That's according to the other candidate in the race.
If I look at my two opponents, they have very similar voting records.
Breckenridge resident Deborah Irvin says her candidacy is the contrast. Irvin, whose family has a history of military and public service, also cites the environment and education as issues for the district, but her main emphasis is on the economy.
Government needs to kind of stay out of the way. When with regard to businesses, I think that people should be self-sufficient and we should provide an environment that encourages that. We do need government for important things. I think when there is a need, we need to help people at the same time, get them to a point where we can help them grow and help them establish themselves and become more independent.
Irvin names overregulation as a top issue and says oil and gas exploration and mining are critical to the district's economy. These industries, she says, create jobs, which in turn provide the solutions to many other concerns. Irvin supports hydraulic fracturing, for example, as long as companies follow environmental rules. And she says the jobs created by extractive industries support other jobs.
When you look at a mine, it isn't just the workers. You have the workers, but then there are service industry that are providing for that. So if you take just the mine itself, I think you probably, you know, quadruple it or times five, the industry, the services, the jobs that will be affected.
In debates and in our interviews with them, the three candidates have been respectful of each other. The one negative aspect in this race has been a series of attack ads against Kathleen Curry, paid for by a mysterious and well-funded political action committee called the Colorado Accountable Government Alliance. Last week, Curry filed an official complaint against the group for what she says are violations of Colorado election laws. There are two other candidates running for House District 61. They are American Constitution Party candidate Robert Petrosky and Libertarian Ellen Tremby. Neither responded to our requests for interview.
That was Aspen Public Radio's Roger Adams reporting. To hear a debate between those three House candidates, visit our website at kvnf.org. A Denver insurance executive has been indicted for allegedly profiting from insider trading through confidential information provided to him by an executive of the now-defunct Delta Petroleum Corporation. According to a news release from U.S. Attorney John Walsh and the FBI, Michael Van Gilder, 45, of Denver, was indicted by a federal grand jury in Denver on five counts of insider trading. The allegations include alleged profiteering based on advanced knowledge that billionaire Kirk Kerkorian's Tresinda Corporation planned to make a major purchase of stock from Delta. Delta owned oil and gas interests based in the Colburn area of Mesa County. This summer, it completed a bankruptcy reorganization plan, changed its name to Par Petroleum Corporation, and entered into a joint venture with Laramie Energy II, in which they pooled their assets in Mesa and Garfield counties under an entity called Piance Energy, LLC. Federal authorities said Van Gilder surrendered to the FBI Friday. If convicted on all counts, he faces up to 100 years in federal prison and up to $25 million in fines. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission also filed a complaint charging Van Gilder with insider trading violations. According to the indictment, Van Gilder had been the chief executive officer and a member of the board of directors of Van Gilder Insurance Company, which is owned by his family. The indictment said Van Gilder was a close friend of the Delta executive who supplied him with information. It didn't identify the executive by name and made no mention of whether charges are being contemplated against the executive. Jeff Dorschner, a Department of Justice spokesman, said the investigation continues. And finally, Hurricane Sandy is impacting the Northeast today and tonight, and this is being widely reported in the national news. The storm is also affecting flight operations at Denver International Airport. According to Laura Cole, Director of Media Relations at Denver International, 50 flights from Denver to the East Coast were canceled Sunday due to Hurricane Sandy, and approximately 60 flights are expected to be canceled today. Cole had the following tips for travelers using DIA or for people expecting to pick up travelers there. Passengers should contact their airlines directly with questions and visit the airline's websites for the latest travel advisories. And travelers should check their flight status before heading out to the airport. This concludes the morning newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria.